Luke 6. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. Jesus tells a parable, and it goes like this. The wise man built his house upon the rock. The wise man built his house upon the rock. The wise man built his house upon the rock, and the rain came tumbling down. And the rains came down, and the floods came up.
The rain came down, and the floods came up. The rain came down, and the floods came up.
And the house on the rock stood firm. And then he tells another parable. Directly after that. The foolish man. No, we won't go into detail. But that's exactly what he does. There's this distinction. And the trouble with it is that we haven't paid, I think, enough attention to these two parallels in the way that Jesus told them and where they are and why they are so important. And I think sometimes, because it's just a short, pithy little thing, we've overlooked it. We've kind of relegated it to Sunday school, and we don't allow for the depths of it. I've been looking at the whole thing of parable again this week, and one of the commentators was saying this. A parable is something, not something that you look at. A parable is something like a house that you have to get inside of and live inside. And as you live inside it, you begin to find your way around it. And so you don't just read it and it's done. You get inside this whole thing. And I want to do that this morning in a brief way, I suppose, with Matthew 7, where this parable comes, and in Luke 6. Now, just to say that in Matthew 7, it's really quite fascinating, because we have in Matthew the Sermon on the Mount, which is chapters 5 and 6 and 7. This parable of the wise builder and the foolish builder comes right at the end of all that Jesus spoke in what we call the Sermon on the Mount. So it's the culmination, if you like. He works towards this crescendo, and then at the end of everything that he's taught them and all the detail that he's gone into, he says, "Let me tell you a story." And it's a story about a man who builds wisely and the one who builds not so wisely. And then, at the end of chapter 7, it says this, "And it came to pass when Jesus finished these words." It came to pass that when Jesus had finished these words, and the reason I'm repeating that is that Matthew uses a stylistic thing to measure out the gospel. And this is the first time he uses that phrase. But he uses it four other times in the gospel, the exact words. He says, "And it came to pass when Jesus finished instructing his 12 disciples." That's in chapter 11. In chapter 13, at the end of all the parables of the kingdom, it says, it came to pass when Jesus finished these parables. Then again in chapter 19, where it says, "It came to pass when Jesus finished these words." And again to the end of the gospel in chapter 26, where it says, "And it came to pass when Jesus had finished all these words." And we're not going into the structure of Matthew this morning. But what I want to give you some idea of is that there is this five-fold structure in Matthew. And in Hebrew literature, if you like, the first and the last are always seen as the two that encompass and hold together the whole thing. And what you have is, in the beginning of chapter 5, it's what? What have we got at the beginning of chapter 5? Let's get those gray brain cells working. Blessed are the Beatitudes, the blessed. And so you have nine blesseds that begin this whole three chapters that end with, "And it came to pass when Jesus had finished these words." It's a unit, as it were. And then you have chapter 11, chapter 13, chapter 18. And then in chapter 26, it starts out with seven woes. And it's hearkening back to Deuteronomy, those chapters. And again, I don't want to go into all the detail, but Matthew is trying to reawaken within his Jewish listeners the whole thing of the Pentateuch and Deuteronomy and all the other stuff that's going on. But what I want us to get this morning is that this parable comes at the apex of the first of these little nuggets, if you like. That Jesus, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, says, I want to tell you a story about a wise man. I want to tell you a story about a foolish man. And again, noting that when you see it in the Psalms and other parts of Jewish literature, when you say the same thing, either in the positive and the negative, or in two different ways, what you're doing is you're reinforcing the same message, both positively and negatively. So understand this. This isn't some little children's thing. This is intrinsic to understanding what it means that Jesus is doing through the gospel. Right. So, we're going to focus more on Luke's one, which comes, Matthew's rendition of the parable comes at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. In chapter 6, I keep mixing the 7s and the 6s up. Luke chapter 6 comes at the end of the sermon when he's come down the mountain and he does basically some of the same things. There's an edited, rendered Reader's Digest version of the Sermon on the Mount. But Luke also keeps this as the end of that thing. And so Luke essentially is looking at what we hear and what we do, the building of a house and the storm and its results. And the climax in both of these things is what happens to the house. Matthew is mostly concerned about the wisdom and the foolishness of how it's done. Luke's concern is the foundation. And so Luke says this, and that's what we read earlier on. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I tell you to do? Everyone coming to me and hearing my words and doing them, I will show you what he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug down deep and went and laid a foundation upon the rock. And when a flash flood arose, the streams broke against the house, and the stream was not strong enough to shake it, because it was well built. And then he uses this parallel. He says, but the one hearing and not doing, he is like the man who built a house on the ground without any foundation, against which the storm broke, and immediately it fell, and the ruin was great. So the storm and its effects have as the climax what happens in terms of this parable. And so, let's just start by looking at the whole thing of building. We've been on a building site where we live for the last couple of years. We moved into our house when the house next door was still being finished, and they were only starting the foundations of some of them. And so over the last 2 years, we've watched as they've dug foundations and thrown them and brought stuff on, and we've watched the whole process from zero to completion. And it's a difficult enough process when you've got diggers that are mechanical and you've got trucks that come in with ready mixed concrete and they just pour it in. It's difficult enough when the trucks load and they've got these big grab arms and they move the trusses and put them out there and they've been built that they can just assemble them. It's an enterprise to build a house. And you know, if you've done any building or you've had any building done at your place, it doesn't always go according to plan, even with the best intentions. But in ancient times, they had none of that available to them. And they used to build, we talked now in Palestine and Israel, they used to build in the summer because it was cold and wet in winter and almost impossible to build, because in the time we're talking about this parable, the building in Palestine was essentially done with stones that they would have got from the field, and they would have taken mud, clay, and they would have packed it together, and they would have, like the walls that you see as you go along country roads, they would have stacked it together and stuck it together with clay. The Romans, at the same time, were using lime, which actually makes it more like cement. But in Israel, at this time, they were using just what was available. And there's two things you need to know. We were in Israel, and it was bitterly cold and wet. Bitterly cold. It snowed in Jerusalem. And along the mountains, it snows. It's just not conducive to building. So building is done in summer, number one. Number two, most of it is clay. Or clay-like ground. Now, my exposure to clay was highly limited, mostly pottery. But when we came and we moved into our house in Essex on clay, I got a few lessons. In winter, it's like greasy, slippery glue. So you dig out and you can't even shake it off the shovel. You've got to sort of use every means possible. It's awful. But then I received another lesson. And Gail wanted something planted, and I had to dig a hole. And I went out in summer last year, and I went with a spade, dung, like that, and it really hurt. Because it was like, it was literally like concrete. It made no impression whatsoever. So when it comes to building in Israel, in the height of summer, when the clay is baked hard, there's actually a verse in Leviticus 26, which talks about the ground being like bronze. And I thought, I know what that looks like. So if you're a builder, at this time of when Jesus is talking, and you come to build just a simple two-roomed house that's 7 feet high, and you've got to dig down to get to the rock. In the valleys, it's much thicker. Up in the mountains, you get to the rock much quicker. But whichever way you slice it, you've got to dig down. And it would be much, much easier to say, well, it's only going to go up 7 or 8 feet, 7 feet mainly. It's going to have a sort of a wooden grass roof. It's only going to be two rooms. Do we really need to go this deep, or how deep? 1991 in Jerusalem, there was an article that was written because a sewer, a block of, I think it was about 35 apartments, one of the sewers had a crack in it, and the water, or whatever it was leaking out. The fluid was leaking out. And they had not built it. It was built on this kind of sandy sort of clay soil. And over a period of time, what it did is it simply melted the clay underneath. And this building collapsed. With all the modern construction methods, this building collapsed because the water simply made it unstable. One of the articles says that it looked like an earthquake had happened. If you're going to build, it is advisable to make sure that you get your foundation right. And so the advice to you and I is, let's make certain that our lives, our corporate lives, are built in a way that is actually sustainable, that is built on the rock. Now, if we move rapidly on 600 years, you get to a time when the community at Qumran were busy operating. And I want to just make a distinction quickly. This is kind of a little history lesson to make you kind of understand where I'm going with this. But they had a different take on this. So By the time you get to when Jesus is strolling around the so-called Holy Land, when it came to the Day of Atonement, the I've got myself all lost here. Oh, here we are. When it came to the Day of Atonement, they would essentially, the priests would come in and they would have a thing of fire that they had on, like a basket. They would come into the Holy of Holies and they would put this fire down on what was called the foundation stone in the Holy of Holies. It was that thick, that high above the ground in the temple. And it was known by everybody as the foundation. The community at Qumran, with the Essenes and so on, they saw things quite differently. What they said was that when there were 15 righteous men, that was the foundation that was going to be the foundation for the new temple. So, essentially what you're looking at as you look through this whole thing is that Jesus is, when he comes and is talking to all these crowds, as he's speaking to them, there are these conflicting things, because Herod is already at this point in time re-energizing the building of the temple, which is in 40 or so years down the road, completely destroyed by the Romans. So whether that's the actual devastation of the storm, we don't know what Jesus was talking about, whether he knew that. But what Jesus picks up on is the passage in Isaiah 28. Isaiah 28, if you go and read there, it's a fascinating passage that is talking about two types of building. And it talks about, it says, you have made a covenant with death, and with the grave you have an agreement. When the overwhelming scourge passes through, it will come to us. In other words, you have made a shelter. What Isaiah is saying to Israel, because what's the historical moment of Isaiah 28 is that the Assyrians are marching down and they are wiping out the smaller nations. Israel makes a covenant with Egypt that Egypt will come and rescue them when the Assyrians arrive. Now, the Egyptians, their main focus was death and the gods of death. And so what Isaiah is saying, you've made a pact with death. That building, that covenant that you've made, won't stand. The Egyptians are going to drop you. And he starts talking about when the storm comes. So he's not without opening up the future and saying there's a hope. But he says there's a foundation that will come, that will be secure. You will have security. So he gives them a sense of hope looking forward. Ezekiel, in Ezekiel 34, I think it is. No, where is it? I've got all mixed up again this morning. It's terrible. But in Ezekiel, I'll tell you later, there's a song where Ezekiel talks about the song and he says it energizes them, but here's what happens. You sing the song and you like the song and it basically tickles your fancy, but you don't do anything about it. It's a love song, but it's nice to listen to, but you never engage with it. And so, what I want to really highlight this morning, and it's as simple as this, is that what Jesus is saying, essentially, to the people who are listening to him, when he talks through all blessed are these things, and you have heard it was said, but I say unto you, what he is doing is he's saying, yes, if you go back and look through the Pentateuch, the five first books in the Bible, if you go and read Deuteronomy carefully, if you go back to Isaiah, if you go back to Ezekiel, in other words, if you look back at the history of God's people, what he's doing is he's saying, Now, at this moment, it's almost as if he says, I am the foundation. He doesn't quite say it like that, but it's like John's various, I am the bread of life, I am the resurrection and the life. It's almost as if Jesus is saying to the people who are listening to him, I am this foundation. The temple you are looking for, the foundation that you are building on, is not bricks, it's not mortar. I'm the rock. God himself is the rock. God is the foundation that we need to build on. And if you build on any other foundation, when the storm comes, and there will be storms, in this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world, says Jesus. But essentially what's going on here is Jesus is saying, I am the bedrock. I am the one that you build your life on. But the critical thing is that, yes, he's the temple and we are the temple and his spirit lives in us, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 3. But I want to come back to what I said last week in Psalm 40 about having your ears pierced as being a person who comes and willingly offers yourself as a servant. It comes back to that passage at the beginning of this parable where he says, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I will show you what they are like. The critical thing is puts them into practice. We live in a world in which we accumulate all kinds of things, but we accumulate knowledge, we accumulate all kinds of understandings. I'll tell you what this is like. I can have a reasonable conversation about esports and computer stuff because of what I've read. But when it comes to actually operating a computer, I'm a Neanderthal. I know the basics. I can basically do the simple stuff that I need to do. But when I see some of these people who are involved in this sort of stuff, and their fingers fly across the keyboards and things are popping up and moving around, and it's like, wow. So it's easy for me to talk a good talk about computers. But when it comes to actually making it happen, I'm all over the place. It's easy to be able to say, Jesus is king, Jesus is this, all that sort of stuff. But what he's saying is, how is it that you say, Lord, Lord, Master, Master, and don't do the things I say? I'll tell you what it looks like, he says. This is what it looks like if you actually start building on the foundation. You actually do what I say. Because that's the essence of what he's saying in this passage. Here's all the stuff I'm teaching you. This is all that's going on all the time. But essentially, if you don't do it, the moment something troublesome comes along, you are going to be wiped out. And it's not because you don't know it. It's because it hasn't become part, intrinsically part, of the way that you live and behave. So belief structure is one thing. The way we live, in other words, the fruit of what we believe, is what Jesus is pointing at here. And if you go and take the time to read the passage just before the end of Luke 6, he talks about this. How will you know that things are real? You'll know by its fruit. How will you know whether there's a reality in a person's life? You will know by the way they behave, by the way they speak, by the way they act in the presence of other people, how they respond to criticism and difficulties. And that doesn't mean that we all get it right all the time. But it comes back to a passage that I want to end with. Blessed is a man who perseveres under trial. This is James 1. How blessed are you if you're able, when the storm hits, to stand, is what he's saying. For once you have been approved, you will receive the crown of life. And then he goes on and talks about a whole lot of other stuff, and then he says this: prove yourselves doers of the word, and not merely hearers who delude themselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who looks at his face in a mirror. And once he's looked at himself and gone away, he immediately forgets what he looks like. I told the story some time back, and it's like so what they often do is they catch vermin, monkeys and baboons by putting something out, and they secure it and they put some fruit inside it, and once the baboon or the monkey's got their hand in, they can't get it out, but they don't want to let it go. But if they do get it out, if it comes out, then what they do is they put one under this arm and they get another one and put it under this arm, but there's still more to go. So there's a dilemma. And then, aha, you drop this one and you put another one under there, and you drop that one and you put another one under there, and you take another one. Then you drop... And in essence, it's a ludicrous scenario, but in essence what we do is that we so often hear things. We hear the love song, and it actually, we take it on board, but it doesn't become part of who we are. We don't eat it, we don't meditate on it, we don't allow the reality of what it is to become part of the way that we live and behave and act. And what Jesus is saying to his hearers is, you've sat here now and you've listened to all of this. It's come over you. Now the challenge is, do you do what I say in this thing? Gail and I were with a couple this week, and when they left, we just felt, yes, it was their passion to serve Jesus and to have him as the center of their lives and to structure their generosity and their hospitality and the way they organize their children and the way that they run their lives. They are not perfect, but there was an intentionality about saying, this is how we want to live. This is the foundation that we want to have. And when Paul writes to the Corinthian church, he says, there is no other foundation other than Jesus. So, I want to invite you to read this and spend the week living in this parable. Live in it. And then ask what it says to you. What it says to you about who you are, where you are, how your foundation looks. What are the storms and rivers of water and all that kind of stuff? I mean, there's all kinds of metaphors that are going on here. But the invite that Jesus is giving to the people who are listening on the mountain and on the plain in Luke is, the choice is, do you do something with it? And you know the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And what Jesus is inviting them to do is drink. That this becomes who they are.